Hello and welcome to the March 2014 IFRIC Update podcast. My name is Michael Stewart, Director of Implementation Activities at the International Accounting Standards Board, and I'm joined today by Wonhee Han, Irina Makarova, Koichiro Kuramuchi and Denise Durant to talk about some of the issues that were discussed by the Interpretations Committee at their meeting on the 25th of March 2014. The views that you'll hear in this podcast will be those of the presenters and won't necessarily be those of the Interpretations Committee or the International Accounting Standards Board. The full details of the Interpretations Committee meeting can be found in the IFRIC Update newsletter, which is posted on the IASB's website. The first issue that we'll look at relates to IFRS 11. Now, we've had a couple of discussions already related to IFRS 11, and that's the standard on joint arrangements. And in particular, we've been discussing the issues about assessing other facts and circumstances with regard to the classification of the joint arrangement. And Wonhee, you were looking at this. What were the issues that we discussed at the March meeting?
In the January 2014 Interpretations Committee's meeting, the committee asked the staff to examine how and why other facts and circumstances create rights and obligations that result in the joint arrangement being classified as a joint operation. The committee also asked the staff to develop examples to analyze this matter. In this meeting, we presented an analysis with regard to the committee's request, including the application of IFRS 11 to some common joint arrangement structures.
So what was the discussion at this meeting then?
The Interpretation Committee considered an analysis of various examples aimed at illustrating the application of the related guidance in IFRS 11 and noted that the analysis can be useful in understanding the guidance in IFRS 11. However, the committee noted that the examples are fact-specific and thought that adding illustrative examples to IFRS 11 may not be the most effective way of clarifying the issues raised. The Interpretations Committee noted that other facts and circumstances need to be assessed when the joint arrangement is structured through a separate vehicle, but neither the legal form of that vehicle nor the contractual agreement result in the parties having direct rights to the assets and direct obligations for the liabilities of the arrangement. It also noted that the purpose of assessing other facts and circumstances is to consider whether other aspects of the joint arrangement other than its legal form or the contractual agreement create rights to assets and obligations for the liabilities in substance. Some members of the Interpretations Committee described this as a substance over form approach, although others observed that the concept of substance over form may not be consistently understood or applied in practice. The committee also observed that in order for other facts and circumstances to result in the parties having obligations for the liabilities of the joint arrangement, it is necessary to demonstrate that cash cascades from the parties through legal or contractual obligations to pay its liabilities of the arrangement. The Interpretations Committee therefore thought that the parties' intention to support the joint arrangement was insufficient to establish obligations for the liabilities of the joint arrangement. However, the Interpretations Committee noted that its view about how substance over form should be applied when assessing other facts and circumstances was central to its analysis. Consequently, the Interpretations Committee decided to consult ISB to inquire whether this is consistent with the ISB's view on this matter before progressing this issue further.
Okay, so what's going to be the next steps then for us on this?
In response to the committee's decision, we will consult ISB on the matters discussed at the committee's meeting and then report the result of the consultation with ISB at a future Interpretation Committee's meeting.
Okay, and I think at that later meeting with the Interpretations Committee, it'll give the opportunity to the committee to report back to the Interpretations Committee the views from the ISB. Then the committee will be able to decide how it wants to progress with this issue and what form of amendment, if any, it thinks should be done to the standard. For the next issue, we're going to look at something that we've described as core inventories, although maybe there's a question about what we call it as much as about what the issue is. Irina, can you start by telling us what this issue is about, please?
The issue relates to the classification of core inventories. The submit that describe core inventories as assets with some common characteristics. First of all, those assets are necessary to bring a protection facility to its required operating condition. Also, those assets are physically commingled with ordinary inventories. And also, they can be removed only when the production facility is finally decommissioned or at a considerable financial charge. The question raised is whether core inventories held in an entity's own facilities should be classified as PPE or as inventories.
Could you give us some examples of core inventories? What would be typical?
Some typical examples would be cushion gas in a cavern, a pipeline fuel, or a minimum amount of material in metal refinery. But actually, we understand that core inventories could be found in many other industries.
Okay. And what is the current practice of accounting for these core inventories?
One of the views is to classify core inventories under IS2 inventories, based on the fact that they are ordinarily interchangeable with other inventories. As such, they are consumed in the production process and used in less than one period. The alternative view is to classify core inventories as an element of production facility cost, based on the fact that they are necessary to bring a production facility to its required operating condition. And based on the feedback we received from different jurisdictions, we understand that the current accounting practice is diversified, both within particular industries and between different sectors.
Okay, so we have the two different views, either classify them as if they are inventories or as property, plant and equipment. What was the Interpretation Committee's view on this?
The majority of the Interpretations Committee members supported the view that co-inventories should be generally accounted for as an element of PPE cost. But the committee noted that the definition of co-inventories is not clear. And the term co-inventories could be sometimes used to describe fact patterns that differ from the definition provided in the submission. So the committee concluded that further analysis is needed to consider its applicability to a range of industries. The Interpretations Committee also acknowledged that the diversity in practice is significant and the further guidance is needed. Thus, the committee decided to address this issue through an interpretation.
Okay, so they've decided that an interpretation is the way they want to go with this particular issue. So what will be the next steps for the committee?
We will analyse the definition of co-inventories, the scope and key principles of the interpretation, and we will bring this analysis to the next Interpretations Committee meeting in May.
Okay, thank you. Our next issue relates to IS 8, Accounting Policies, Changes in Accounting Estimates and Errors. And it's about the distinction between a change in accounting policy and a change in accounting estimate. Now, Koichiro, could you please briefly describe what the issue is that's been submitted to us?
Well, Michael, the Interpretations Committee received a request to clarify the distinction between a changing accounting policy and a changing accounting estimate in relation to application of IAS 8. The submitter stated that enforcers have identified divergent practices regarding the assessment of whether a change qualifies as a changing accounting policy or a changing accounting estimate in accordance with IAS 8. Moreover, the submitter pointed out that IAS 8 sets out stricter criteria for changing accounting policies compared with those in accounting estimates. According to IAS 8, in order to change an accounting policy, the issuer is required to justify that change provides more relevant information, whereas there is no such requirement for a changing accounting estimate.
So what was the Interpretation Committee's view on this issue?
Well, the Interpretations Committee noted that a change in accounting estimate may encompass two kinds of changes. One is a change in estimation method or model. The other one is a change in inputs used for the estimation, both of which result in a change in accounting estimate.
Okay, so change in accounting estimate could be both a change in the estimation method and also the change in the inputs to that method.
Exactly. Also, the Interpretation Committee thinks that a change in the estimation method should be made when it provides equally or more relevant information. So, Interpretations Committee focused on that kind of estimates. The Interpretations Committee observed that it would be helpful if clearer guidance was given for the circumstances where changing the method of estimation may be made. And the Interpretation Committee also thinks that a change in a method of estimation should only be made if that change results in reliable and equally or more relevant information. At the same time, the Interpretations Committee considered that require the amendment of IAS 8.
Okay, so they've reached a conclusion as to when it would be appropriate for a change in estimation methodology to be applied, but they feel that an amendment to the standard is needed in order to require this.
Exactly. So in addition to that, the disclosure requirement is different between a change in accounting policy and change in accounting estimate as well. So to provide a robust disclosure for the changing accounting estimate, especially for the changing estimation method, is another area in the Interpretations Committee focused.
Now, is that something that is already required?
So there is a requirement. At the same time, it's a little bit vague, and maybe some clarification would be provided.
Okay. Right. So this potential amendment could include
exactly
clarification of the disclosures as well.
Exactly.
Okay. So what are the next steps for this project?
Yes. At this meeting, committee members agreed with the basic direction of the amendments. We will bring this issue to the IASB as a narrow scope amendments of IAS 8.
Okay. Thank you. Our next issue relates to IAS 34, Interim Financial Reporting, and in particular to the condensed statement of cash flows and the preparation of that. Now, Denise, can you briefly explain what the issue is that was submitted to us?
Yes, sure, Michael. Well, we received a request to clarify the application of the requirements regarding the presentation and content of the condensed statement of cash flows in the interim financial statements. And this question related to the application of paragraph 10 in IAS 34, which, as you know, is referring to interim financial reporting.
And what's the main concern that's been brought to us?
Well, Michael, there are divergent views on the presentation and content of the condensed statement of cash flows. One view is that you should present a detailed structure of the condensed statement of cash flows. So that would mean that you will be showing cash flows by nature. And another view is that you may only present a three-line condensed statement of cash flows, so very, very succinct, and you will only show a total for each one of the operating, investing, and financing cash flow activities.
Okay, so contrast between a three-line condensed or a more detailed interim cash flow.
Right.
And what was the Interpretation Committee's view on this issue?
Well, the Interpretations Committee analyzed the guidance in IAS 34, and more specifically the guidance in paragraphs 8, 10, 15, and 25 of IAS 34. And, well, first of all, the Interpretations Committee noted that a condensed statement of cash flows is one of the primary statements that are included as part of the interim financial report, and also noted that the objective of an interim report is to include, first of all, information that is not misleading. Also, the objective is to include all information that is significant and relevant to an understanding of the entity's financial position and performance of the entity, and the changes also in financial position and performance. and this information is reported since the end of the last annual reporting period.
So if we apply those principles that you've just mentioned to the issue raised, what was the Interpretation Committee's conclusion?
So, well, on the basis of the requirements in IS34 that I just mentioned, a condensed statement of cash flows should include information that is useful in understanding the entity's ability to generate cash and cash equivalents and the entity's needs to utilize those cash flows. So the Interpretations Committee concluded that a three-line presentation would generally not meet the requirements in IS 34. So on the basis of the existing guidance in IS 34, the Interpretations Committee decided to issue a tentative agenda decision.
Okay, so not to take it onto its agenda.
Right, yes.
Okay. Now, so what's the next step then?
Well, the next step is to expose this tentative agenda decision for 60 days, and we will bring back an agenda decision to the committee at a future meeting.
Good. Thank you. So that brings us to the end of this time's IFRIC Update podcast. As I mentioned, the tentative agenda decisions we've talked about today, plus others that were discussed by the Interpretations Committee at this meeting, are included in IFRIC Update and are open for comment for 60 days. The comments received on those will be considered by the Interpretations Committee at its July meeting, when it will determine whether to finalise those agenda decisions and whether to make any changes to the wording. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.